And joining us today is Abby Stokes. Abby is the author of the book, Is This Thing On? She is the hand-holding expert. She knows how to teach the joys of technology to anyone who didn't grow up using a keyboard or a mouse. Some people are afraid of computers. Some people are afraid of, you know, any technology that they might mess it up. But this book just basically is a personal trainer for the digitally challenged, as it says on the cover. So with that introduction, I want to thank you, Abby Stokes, for joining us today.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure.
Now, one of the things that jumps out right here in the back of the book, it says, I owe it all to my mother.
And that is true. When I first got my hands on a computer about 20 years ago, I like pressing buttons. As a child, my favorite toy was a cash register. So I think computers, it wasn't about what the computer can do for me. It was just because it had buttons that I wanted to buy one. And so when I got my computer, my mom asked me if I could show her how to use it. And I'll tell you, I was very skeptical because my mother to this day, 20 years later, she still can't change her clock radio when the time changes. So I wasn't convinced that I could actually show her how to use the computer, but she taught me a lesson. When my mother got on the computer and she saw what the internet had to offer, because she's a very curious mind, that got her to learn to use the computer. So the lesson for me was, in order to have somebody learn how to use something, the best way to do it is figure out what the benefit is to them. They're not learning it then because they have to or because they want to keep up with other people. They're learning it because they have something that they want to achieve. So that was a lesson for me. Shortly after that, I started teaching other people, most of them digital immigrants over the age of 40, most of them actually over the age of 60, how to use a computer, and that then led to the book and the websites. And so it really did all begin with my mom and seeing, A, that she would do it, but B, that she had to learn how to do it in a very specific way.
Now, as you mentioned, you know, your mother has become a, if you want to call her an expert, or very good at using that. My father uses it all the time. But there are still people, like, as you mentioned, perhaps digital immigrants or, you know, people that are not used to the computers, and they're scared. They're afraid that something is going to go wrong. They're going to break it. When I worked in television news, we were so used to writing on typewriters. And then one day, our news director took all the typewriters away, hit them, and all we had were computers, and we were terrified.
Well, I think that's part of the problem. When you get thrown in the deep end of the pool, it isn't really the nicest way to learn how to swim. So when suddenly, you know, you're forced to use it, or in that case, it's funny, when I first started working on the very first iteration of this book, the publishing house that I did it with, Workman, who are amazing, it was the clickety-clack of typewriters when I first got there, and then it all changed over. So I think it's important for those people that haven't jumped on board yet, their fear is really not necessarily of the technology. Their fear is that the digital divide is just getting wider and wider and that they can't cross it. So I want to ensure anybody who is feeling like they can't learn to use the technology, in my 20 years of teaching, I have never had it be that somebody couldn't learn to the technology as long as somebody gently showed them how to do it. I actually had a woman who was fascinating. She had lung cancer that had metastasized to her brain, so she had no immediate memory. So when I went for a lesson with her, she wouldn't have remembered that I'd been there before. As a matter of fact, if I left the room and came back in, she wouldn't have remembered that I'd been there before. In her case, on index cards, I wrote down the very first card said, sitting on the keyboard, you know how to use a computer. And underneath that card was how to turn it on, and underneath that card was how to access her email. So every time she sat down at the computer, it was a brand new experience. In the beginning, she would get so fearful she would tear up during the lessons. By the time we'd had several lessons, it wasn't that she remembered she knew how to use the computer, but innately it became something that her body wasn't as afraid of. I can't explain it more than that, but she stopped crying. And it wasn't because she could remember. So I think it's about getting familiar with it in small, regular visits rather than sitting down for an hour trying to jam it in your head how to use it and not using it again for a week or two. I think it really is 10 or 15 minutes a day is the trick the first few weeks to get yourself accustomed to it.
We are visiting with Abby Stokes, and she is the author of the book, Is This Thing On? Today's young people, today's generation, a lot of them are learning about computers as young as grade school. So by the time they come to, you know, college, like here where I teach, they already know so much that, you know, it's not unusual for a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old to help mom and dad do something.
Well, it's very true. Although, you know what's interesting? And that's on the website, on AskAbbyStokes.com. I have a page devoted to teachers and librarians. And I have done talks with high school teachers trying to figure out how to bridge what kids do need to learn about computers that they're not finding out about. What kids don't know about computers, on top of them not being very respectful of the security issues, is they don't actually know how to organize their homework or their assignments on the computer. So it's important for them to know how to set up folder systems and how to name things, as it is for us as well. But it's, I say that only to let the older adults realize that it's, kids use this technology very quickly because they think of it like a toy. So they're not as afraid of it, but they actually don't have some of the same skill sets that older adults may have with sort of envisioning how to harness the material in a way so you can access something without having to open it to see what it is.
I'm glad you mentioned the security issues, because that is a big issue that a lot of people talk about all the time. And that is, you know, today's kids and even the adults, see something on Facebook, they respond instantly, or they'll post it, they'll share without reading in detail what it's about. And so Facebook is the gospel.
Well, it's dangerous if you're not careful. And so I always say you need to think about your general security issues like you think about your home. You're not afraid in your home, but you still lock the door, right? You still lock the windows. So we want to be sure that people are using smart passwords that are not too hard to remember, but smart passwords to protect themselves. And when it comes to social networking, I have one rule of thumb, and that is anything you choose to share on Facebook or Twitter or wherever it is, you're going to ask yourself the question whether or not it passes the front door test. That question is, would you feel comfortable having it on the outside of the door to your home? The photograph of you in a towel or saying mean things about your high school teacher if you're a student. It's a great way to actually talk to kids rather than giving them rules and regulations about what they can and can't do online. Just say to them, well, would you put that on the front door of the house? And the answers would be no, and then they wouldn't put it online. But that's true for all of us, to use that rule of thumb.
We're visiting with Abby Stokes. Abby is the author of the book, Is This Thing On? A Friendly Guide to Everything Digital. One of the stories I like to share with my students and with friends is the fact that I'm a big student of Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War. But President Lincoln, when he was upset, he would write letters to his friends or whoever he was upset about. And then he'd put it in his pocket, and then at the end of the day, he would just tear it up and throw it away. Well, on Facebook, the problem is that people write these letters when they're angry, and they hit click, and then all of a sudden, it's gone.
You're absolutely right. I used to always mail the letters to myself. If I was really mad at somebody, I'd write a letter, and I'd mail it to myself. So you could do the same thing. You could write an email, but just send it to yourself. Don't send it to somebody else. It's how easy it is to click. That's why it's also dangerous. Is you could be reading something that somebody else wrote you, and it's so easy now to forward it to somebody else where you wouldn't have been able to do that in the past with a letter or something like that. So it really is, you should think very hard before you click the mouse. You have to think hard before you click the mouse whether or not you save the changes to a document you're writing. So you should probably take your hand off the mouse when you're on Facebook. Read what you wrote before you decide to post it.
There are some people who have not entered the digital age, and what I mean by that is they don't have a cell phone, they don't have a computer, they don't have an email account, they don't have Facebook, but it's becoming very necessary because when you go to the doctor's office, they now have medical portals where you access that portal to find out about your prescriptions, your refills, and just about everything is digital, Amy.
It's true. And I, you know, it used to be when I started teaching, I would say to people, the goal of my classes wasn't to recruit people to get online. The goal of my classes was to prove to people they can do it. That's the first step. Now it's harder and harder to say to people that they don't have to get online because so many things are offered online. It's detrimental just to not take advantage of what's out there. So if somebody's feeling really cautious about it and they haven't touched it yet, just know statistically, there's still 49% of people over the age of 65, 49% in the United States haven't visited a website. So you're not that far behind the median. So it just means you're not alone. it's time for you to just get up and go to your library and take a look at their computers or get a hold of somebody else's tablet and just do a little tootle around, and you'll prove to yourself that it's not nearly as difficult as you think it is.
I'm glad you mentioned tablet, because that's another thing that can be just as confusing as the technology, and that is the vocabulary that is being used. So when people talk about tablets, you know, for some people it's a Big Chief tablet, you know, where we used to write our names and do homework and all that stuff. But people want to know, okay, what is a tablet? What is an iPad?
iPad.
Okay, what is a Kindle? What is a Samsung Galaxy? So all these names are being thrown out there and they have no clue.
I know, and it's hard. I think people generally feel like they're chasing after the technology. They have to keep up with it. You don't, although it's a really good idea to keep up with what it is. A tablet essentially is a handheld device, so it usually weighs about a pound and a half at the most. It's like a computer as far as what it can do, but it doesn't have an external keyboard. It doesn't have a mouse. It's all done with a touch screen on the front of the tablet. So a keyboard appears, but it appears on the screen, and your finger is really the mouse. Your finger navigates its way around using the tablet. So tablets are great choices for people if they want to carry their technology with them and they want it to be small. Tablets aren't a great choice if you have eye issues, macular degeneration, or some other eye issues that make the screen of the tablet really not big enough for you to use it. They're harder to use if you have arthritis or Parkinson's. But in that case, you can get an adjustment and use a stylus or use an external keyboard with the tablet. You just gave a list of a bunch of different tablets, iPads, Samsung Galaxy, the Kindle Fire. Those all live under the umbrella of a tablet. They're all just manufactured by different people. So the Apple iPad is Apple's product. The Samsung Galaxy, people also refer to that as an Android. That's a non-Apple product. Kindle is Amazon's product. So it's a Kindle Fire, and it technically is really just a tablet, but that, you know, it sort of lives in that gray area. Is it an e-reader with additional stuff, or is it a tablet? I say it works as a tablet. So it connects you to the internet, lets you do email, lets you store photographs. You can visit websites, and then there are all these programs that you can add to the device. They're called apps or software applications that let you do whatever it is that really interests you the most.
Okay, let's talk about apps, because that word is used a lot, and people have no idea, like, what kind of app? What is an app? What is a widget? What do I need to download?
First thing I should tell you, in the back of the book and on the website, for free on the website, I list 100 free apps broken down by category. I'm a big believer in taking advantage of what's free. So an app is a software program, or application is what the abbreviation is for, that you bring onto your either smartphone or tablet. Here's a great example of one. I teach computers in New York City, so I'm always walking around between clients, and sometimes I need to find a ladies' room, and it's not so easy to do in New York City. Charmin actually sponsored an app called Sit or Squat, and it finds you with a GPS where you are, and it tells you where the nearest public bathroom is, and they even give reviews of the bathroom. So that's sort of an interesting example. There are so many, literally there are hundreds of thousands of apps out there for what you want to do. If you want to have help tallying a restaurant check to know how much tip to leave, or if you like to fish and you want to know when the high tide is going to happen, if you like to follow weather, there are many, many, many apps out there, and each device, whether it's an Android like the Samsung Galaxy or whether it's an Apple device like the iPad, each device has its own app that's a store that lets you go to that app, you press on it with your finger to open it, and then you get to see the list of things that are available, and some of them are free, like the 100 ones that I recommend, and some of them you can pay for if you want to. So once the program's on the device, then you can use the program whenever you want to. It's available to you all the time.
We're visiting with Abby Stokes. Abby is the author of the book, Is This Thing On? A Friendly Guide to Everything Digital. Abby, one of the things that people will find sometimes when they're downloading an app or trying to, they want the app, but the app, the site says, this is not, does not work with your current tablet or whatever device you have. And then there are some apps that say if you download this, you'll be able to put this on your Kindle Fire or on your Android. Do you recommend doing that?
Well, the first thing is you said a word that I want to be sure everybody understands because it's so easy for us to do this. You use the word download. Download means to move it from one place to another. So when you download a program, it's like I just downloaded my summer clothes from the top of my closet, hoping that someday it'll warm up. So when you download something, you're moving it. So when you download an app, it means you're taking it from the app store onto your device. I will say this. If there's ever anything that pops up on the screen that makes you step back for a moment and say the words, should I? Geez, this app says that I need to upgrade something in order to use it. Or, geez, this app is asking me a question I don't understand. If you're asking the word, should I, that means that the answer is no, because you don't know the right answer. So the safer thing to do if you have concerns is to not continue the action you're taking until you can sit beside a friend of yours who knows a little bit more than you do, or send me an email and I'll answer you and tell you what it's about. But if there's ever a question where something's asking you to do something, whether it's an email you're opening or whether it's an app you're putting onto your smartphone, when you say, should I, listen to the voice in your head that's concerned that it's you're asking because you don't know what the answer is. That's the safest thing you can do.
The Kindle and the Nook originally were designed to be readers. However, as you mentioned earlier, now they're being used for just about everything, and how when Nook used to be at the top of the list, now it's kind of like by the wayside and Kindle has taken over.
Well, it's so interesting how that happens with the fight in technology. You know, e-readers were such a great innovation, although a lot of people responded negatively because they liked the sensation of holding a book in their hand. So when e-readers started to morph into tablets, which was sort of the dividing line there, the Nook got kind of left behind because people still thought of the Nook as just an e-reader, that you couldn't really connect to the internet and do other things on it. So I think it was a little bit of bad marketing on their part. Kindle, you know, Amazon holds a huge market here, so they're able to really draw a lot of people using the Kindle, and they have a lot of free advertising. But they all really generally can accomplish the task at hand, which is, if you want to read a book on it, you can. To connect to the internet, they do. You can check your email. So all of them really meet your needs. It's a matter of the price point that's comfortable for you and what size you want it to be. Is it comfortable for you to read a book on the smaller devices, or do you want the slightly larger device?
We're visiting with Abby Stokes. Abby is the author of Is This Thing On? A Friendly Guide to Everything Digital. You mentioned working and living in New York City. And one of the things that I know about New York, at least from my friends, my brother-in-law, that, most of them don't drive cars because it's crazy. And just the parking alone will kill you. But if you're on the subway, if you're on the train, wherever, it's good to be able to download a book, or even something that is really taken off as well are audiobooks.
Yeah, it's a great feature to have an audiobook. Now, obviously, if you're on a subway, people get mad at you if you listen to the audiobook without putting your headset on. but it's a good idea to load up your iPhone or your smartphone and your tablet with things to keep you entertained if you're on a vacation, or in this case, if you're traveling in transit, using commuter rail, to be sure that you've got things on the device that are interesting to you so you can have some fun with it and not just use it as a utilitarian thing to check your email or something like that. Very important point I want to make to people who are thinking of getting handheld devices. Bad habits can cause us great discomfort. And when you're using a smartphone or you're using a tablet, I just saw a really good image about this. If you have your head down 60 degrees because that's how you're looking at your smartphone or your tablet, that is the equivalent of 60 pounds of weight on your spine. Shocking. So if you're using a smartphone or you're using a tablet, I want to be sure that people actually get in the habit of holding it up in front of them. In my mom's case, I won't let her use a tablet unless she puts it up on a table like you would a book, because otherwise she slouches over it too much, and I'm really afraid of what kind of damage will happen from doing that.
That's interesting, especially because I suffer from a back, and I never heard that, but thank you for mentioning
that.
So
25 degrees is 25 pounds. 60 degrees is 60 pounds.
Wow.
I know. Shocking, isn't it?
So I can say that I gained 20 degrees instead of...
but I'd like to lose 60 degrees.
Okay. What about the eyesight? There are some people who, and some people say, well, it's just a promotion. You don't need to get that. But there are companies out there that sell computer glasses.
Computer glasses?
Yes. So that the glare...
They make sense, because what happens is, You know, when you're nearsighted and when you're farsighted, you've got glasses to compensate for that. The computer screen is just the same distance from you, usually, the same way piano music is on a piano. And they used to sell piano glasses because it's just that middle range where your glasses actually don't suffice, depending on what it is your eye issues are. So I actually think it's a very good idea for people to get glasses that are specific for the distance to the computer. Just be sure you leave them at the computer because it's super confusing when you put them on and you try to walk around because they're going to fog out the distance or the near stuff. But it is true that that is a very specific distance to be working at. It also is true that distance of the monitor away from you is just the distance that you don't have to move your eyes to take in what's on the screen, and that causes dry eye. So at the end, the National Institute of Health says that you should be on the computer for 40 minutes and take a 10-minute break every 40 minutes, set a timer for that. But at the end of that 40 minutes, you should do an eye exercise that I have in the book. And it's that you rub your hands together until your palms are warm, and then you put them over your eyes closed, and then roll your eyes around a bit and open your eyes and look into the distance. That's a great exercise to combat dry eye. And dry eye makes any eye issue you have worse, so it can actually be quite dangerous. So every 40 minutes, just do that little exercise with rubbing your hands together and putting them over your eyes, and that will help promote wetter eyes.
We're visiting with Abby Stokes. Abby is the author of the book, Is This Thing On? A Friendly Guide to Everything Digital. One of the things, Abby, we have not touched upon, and this is kind of a sore spot for some adults, some teachers, educators, and the fact that this generation uses texting a lot.
Uses what?
Texting.
Oh, texting, yes. Well, you know, our communication gets smaller and smaller. You know, it first was letter writing, and then it was phone calls, and then it was emails. Now it's text messaging, and frankly, with the new iWatch, it's just going to vibrate when you think of somebody. You're not even going to write anything. The texting is, it's interesting. You know, I sort of swallow it because it's what I teach people to do, but I think texting can be a very big mistake when you're trying to convey something important. So, you know, if you're in a relationship and you're having some trouble, text messaging isn't the right way to go. If you want to talk to somebody about something important, text messaging just is, it's too brief and too impersonal, but it does serve a purpose. You're at the movie theater. Somebody's getting the popcorn while you went to get the seats. They don't know where you're sitting. A fast text saying them in the fifth row, the third seat over, that's handy. So I love text messaging for those brief things that are practical, but I don't love it as a way to communicate. And it's hard with younger people because they love it for all kinds of communication. And it's hard to lure them away from the text messaging to get them to actually even still use email because they think it's boring and takes too long.
What about social use? There's you go to a restaurant and you see everybody there not talking to each other, but they're looking down at their device, whatever it is. And some families have even banned them from the dinner table because they say, we're going to have family time. And then people don't know what to say.
Right. It's true. I was known once a couple of years ago to take somebody's cell phone and I put it inside a glass of water because they were so rude in the restaurant. It was the only way I could get them off the phone. It made a big fight and I don't recommend it for everybody else. But I do think we're examples. You know, we can all say that we don't want people to use the phone at the table, but be sure you're not using the phone at the table. You know, it's hard for us because we're so tied into this technology. So I think, you know, a general rule that nobody uses the phone at the table is a great thing to do. So it's just not introduced to the table. The other thing I just said to somebody the other day when they were talking about not being able to get their kids offline when they're home, you're in charge of the Wi-Fi signal. Shut it down. You know, they're not allowed to change the password. They're not allowed to use the Wi-Fi until they earn it. That's, you know, it was the same way when I was a kid. It wasn't Wi-Fi we were talking about, but, you know, could I go out and play with somebody? Well, not till my room was clean. So just shut down the Wi-Fi until they do what it is you need them to do, and then you turn it back on. It's much more in the control of the parents than they think it is.
This is another thing that has been brought up, and it's very rude, I think, when you're standing at the line of the grocery store or in a doctor's office, and somebody will answer the phone, and they'll be talking, and the conversation is just so loud.
I know.
That you can't, you know, they're not paying attention to the checker. You're asking, please, can you hurry up? I'm behind you. And they keep talking.
And the terrible thing with that is the technology gets a bad reputation when really
yes.
It's the person using it. I am apt in New York, especially because people are talking on their phones all the time. I'll be on a bus and I can hear everything somebody's saying. I'll just shout back, I can hear you, just to let them know. We can all hear you. It's a good idea when you get a smartphone to go outside call somebody on the phone and say to them, I'm testing my phone. Let me see how quiet I can be, and start whispering. And you'll realize the phone has a microphone. It's picking up your voice even if you're whispering. Then you can figure out that's the only modulation you need when you're using the phone, and that'll make you behave a little bit better. I tend to put my hand, cut my hand over my mouth when I'm talking on the phone if I'm in a public place, because I don't think it's anybody else's business what I'm saying.
We're visiting with Abby Stokes. Abby is the author of Is This Thing On? A Friendly Guide to Everything Digital. One of the chapters in your book, and it's towards the end, Abby, where you're talking about what's fun and what's new, and a thing that kind of sticks out, it has a little neat little graphic there. It's the Fitbit philosophy. Let's talk about that.
Well, I love this wearable technology that we're talking about. I think it's fun and it's innovative, and it makes it easy for people, like with the Fitbit. You know, you can track your physical activity, so that you can actually, you know, you think you're super active and then you discover you're not. I find all of the wearables that we talk about in the back to be very interesting. And the new iWatch that's coming out, it's so funny. I was having this conversation again the other day with somebody, and I said, my goddaughter is living with me. She's 23 years old. She's never owned a watch. She doesn't wear a watch. This iWatch that's so popular right now that's just about to come out, it's retro, really, if you think about it. They're going back to the technology of wearing a watch. Granted, it does a lot more than our regular watches did. But the Fitbit is interesting because these technologies, you wear them on your wrist, but they tie into your smartphone or your tablet or your computer. There are heart monitors that you can wear that you can actually keep track of your health and put it onto your computer and then feed that information to your doctor so they can see day by day what's been happening with your blood sugar or your heart rate, or in this case, with your exercise. So that's what makes the Fitbit and other things like that very interesting, because you can track the information easily and put it onto your computer and share it with other people.
Another one of the things that actually it came out at Christmas, and some of the other ones had already been out, like Chrome and Roxy, but the Amazon Fire Stick.
Well, yeah. So I don't actually have a television set. I haven't had a TV set since the towers went down on 9/11, because that was actually my signal. I've never paid for cable because I don't like the idea. But I do have a computer, so that's where I watch all of my television shows and movies. There are all of these great devices now, like the sticks and using Apple TV and using Roku, that allow you to basically bridge your internet connection with your television. So it means you can pull onto your television, Netflix and other services where you're watching movies from the internet, and make them a part of your TV set. So that's really the innovation that we're going to. I mean, very soon it'll be sort of seamless between what's a TV set and what's a computer because of what you're able to do between all of them. Even, you know, it's a crazy technology that I just heard about. You can take your iPhone and you can plug it into a real three-dimensional piano that has a device in it that allows the songs on your iPhone to be played on the piano. So the piano's actually playing the songs. That is crazy technology.
That is incredible.
Isn't that fascinating? So you have a player piano, but it's actually playing songs that you've chosen from your iPhone.
Abby, we have run out of time, but we want to thank you very much for being with us here today. We've been visiting with Abby Stokes. She is the author of the book, Is This Thing On? A Friendly Guide to Everything Digital. She also has a website, and it's askabbystokes.com.